This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a big celebration as we say goodbye to 2013. A look back on past years through a photo collection. A talk with a new leader in the arts community. Or a grand celebration with the crew of Joan of Arc. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. How will you celebrate this New Year's Eve? Will you be in that number in Jackson Square, ground zero, waiting for the 8-foot fleur-de-lis to drop, signaling the beginning of 2014? Maybe you'll stick around for the fireworks extravaganza that follows on the riverfront. The partying begins at 9 p.m. with entertainment by Eric Lindell and the Honey Island Swamp Band. If big crowds overwhelm you, there are other venues nearby. Tipitina's New Year's Eve features the funk band Galactic, the Revivalist headline at the Civic Theater, and Dumpster Funk and the Hot 8 Brass Band celebrate at Howlin' Wolf. And that's just a few options for your evening. As we say goodbye to 2013, a photography exhibit looks back over past years. The New Orleans Museum of Art is offering a glimpse at a fraction of its collection of photographs. Of the 10,000 pictures, 132 are on display. Eileen Fleming spoke with curator Russell Lord about the exhibition, how NOMA built such an extensive collection, starting in the 1970s, and why.
The museum made then the very prescient decision to begin collecting photography in a very serious way. And that was a time when not many other museums were looking at photography, and they weren't collecting it, they weren't building permanent collections. So as a result, the museum actually had very little competition for great things. And of course, the other major factor is that photographs were remarkably inexpensive back then. You know, when you think about a museum like New Orleans Museum of Art, at the time they realized that they might not be able to compete with the Art Institute of Chicago or the Metropolitan Museum of Art in terms of building a collection of Impressionist paintings. But they realized that they could compete with any institution for photography. And as a result of that decision, we now have one of the finest collections of photography, of art photography, in the United States.
And tell me, what makes a good photograph?
As far as what makes a great photograph, it's a difficult question. When I was making the selection for this particular exhibition, I sort of based it on a few different criteria. The first was the image. I wanted it to be a very compelling image. I wanted it to be an image that posed questions to the viewer. I wanted you to look at all of these things and say, well, what's happening here? The second criteria was the condition and the quality of the object itself. Photography is, as you know, a medium of multiples, so there are more than one of most of these things. But if other museums have another example of one of the pictures that you see here on the wall, it's probably not as good as ours. The things that you see in this exhibition are the finest examples of whatever they are. The third criteria was each picture's role in a history of photography. I very much wanted this exhibition to kind of mirror what I call the cultural ambitions of photography. And that is to say that photography has been a part of every aspect of modern life, from science photographs to forensic photography to ethnographic studies to fashion images to advertising images. And each one of those facets are well represented in this exhibition.
Is there a New Orleans section?
The history of photography is full of examples of famous photographers coming to New Orleans. So New Orleans has, in a way, played a very central role in the history of photography. And that made it very easy for me to include New Orleans in a prominent way in this exhibition, in the form of photographs by photographers that most people will know. But some will be surprised to find out that they were here and that they photographed in this city. We're now looking at one of the earliest photographs of New Orleans, a street scene by Theodore Lilienthal. who was a German immigrant, but became a photographer, a commercial photographer, and in the mid-19th century, he was commissioned by the city of New Orleans. It was actually the first municipal photography commission in the United States to make a survey of New Orleans. You're looking at the Charles Hotel, so this is on St. Charles Avenue, just a couple of blocks off of Canal. The building is no longer there. Surrounding the hotel, you see all of these wonderful buildings that we know as New Orleans architecture, the wrought iron balconies. But one of my favorite details is the sign advertising John Lazarus's Great Southern Watch Depot. There's a large oversized pocket watch hanging down from the sign. And because of the great detail in this large glass negative, we know, reading the clock, that the picture was made roughly at 10:02 in the morning. So it's a wonderful kind of serendipitous detail, but a really beautiful slice of life in New Orleans in the middle of the 19th century.
And this one, it looks like it's on glass.
This is one of the photographic negatives that we have on display. It's a glass negative by the well-known New Orleans photographer E.J. Belloc. He also made an entire series of pictures of the Storyville prostitutes. This one shows a mantle. It's believed to be Belloc's own mantle. In it we see pictures of women in bathing suits in sort of posing somewhat coyly, but they're far more chaste than the pictures of the Storyville prostitutes. So it seems to be a sort of strange in-between image, we don't know of any vintage prints that were made from this negative, so we've decided to show the negative itself. And it is here beautifully displayed with a backlight so that you can really see the image in the negative.
They're all black and white, except I see a red there.
That's right. There are three color images. I should say that the date range of the exhibition runs from 1843 to 1985. We made the decision to not include more contemporary things. We hope to continue building our more contemporary collection, and I wanted to leave room for the possibility of a photography at NOMA part two, 5 to 10 years from now, once we've had a chance to build that collection.
Photography at NOMA, Part 1, runs through January 19th. Voices of the Arts is a partnership with NOLA-V and WWNO, featuring 8 new leaders of the city's foremost cultural organizations. New Orleans arts institutions have perhaps never gone through this kind of major change all at once. We're hearing from these new executives on what they bring to New Orleans, how they are embracing our culture, and what their plans are for the future. Today we hear from the man at the helm of the Ogden Museum of Southern Art.
My name is William Andrews. I'm the director of the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. I'm from Mississippi. I was just living in Oxford, Mississippi, where I was director of the University Museum and Historic Houses, and included William Faulkner's home, Rowan Oak. Moved here in January of 2012. I've been here about 19 months. I think any museum has a primary goal of being relevant, and they want to always have a greater impact to the community that they seek to serve. It's very interesting because there's no real formula for that. And so when you're crafting education, when you're crafting exhibitions, programs, events, outreach, all of those things really have to be thought on terms of the individual. And you hope that that impact grows communities and connectivity, that it resonates within the different communities that make up New Orleans. I think in the museum we are always talking big plans. You have to look around the curve and envision the roadmap of where you want to be and how you want to get there. And as a museum that celebrates its 10th anniversary this year, we're a very young institution. I think that has so many advantages because even though we have a very strong mission, we still have the opportunity to continue to chart our course as we're sailing it. And that is of great value. You measure often your success in many different ways, numbers being a popular metric. They are not the only currency, as we like to say. And so we spend time thinking about how to judge the effectiveness of what we do at the Ogden Museum for our mission. I think when you're considering funding for cultural institutions in a particular city anywhere, you'll see that the ones that survive and truly thrive are the ones that are making meaningful, lasting, collaborative efforts. Recently, we've been heavily involved in collaboration with Sculpture for New Orleans that brings large-scale monumental outdoor sculpture in a public environment throughout the city. Looking forward to collaborating with Prospect with the next biennial. And our relationship with the University of New Orleans is an important one to the Ogden Museum because we consider ourselves the university's largest classroom. We have 75,000 square feet of educational opportunities. We also welcome any university or college in the city. There's tremendous learning capacity in the museum that needs to be open and available to any educational institution. And that's one of our big goals that we talk about. You know, being a museum director is something typically for which there isn't a specific academic path or, you know, jobs leading you up to training you for it. And coming from being a painter and teaching painting and even teaching graduate school and dealing with lots of bureaucracies and administrations can still never prepare you for the fact that there is never really, no matter what you do, enough time in the day to accomplish the goals that you set out for yourself. But it is essential to maintain your craft. Being a painter, you know, it's essential to be able to speak that language. It helps you stay connected to the mission. It helps you stay connected to your passions. And I think those are things that help you, in turn, inspire other people. The artist Bill Dunlap told me, go into the studio every day, even if all you're going to do is sweep up.
You can find out more about William Pittman Andrews' plans for the Ogden Museum of Southern Art at wwno.org or nolav.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The city is gearing up for a big birthday bash on 12th night as revelers walk a new route in the 6th annual Joan of Arc Parade in the French Quarter. This would be Joan's 602nd anniversary. The Young Parade was founded in 2008 by Amy Kirk, and she's here now to talk about the upcoming festivities. Amy, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane.
You're celebrating 6 years as a marching crew. Tell us how the crew of Joan of Arc was founded.
Well, it was founded in the fall of 2008. I wanted to do something honoring Joan of Arc, and the fact that her birthday happens to fall on January 6th and 12th night made it seem like a logical choice to have a parade for her, to kind of kick off the Mardi Gras season in a medieval fashion, but also kind of bridge that interesting time between Christmas and Mardi Gras. You know, 12th night is the end of the Christmas season, and so it feels like a nice way to transition into the new year.
So tell us Joan's unique story and why New Orleanians celebrate her.
Joan is known as the Maid of Orléans because she helped to lift the siege of Orléans. The French had pretty much all but given up, and she arrived to make that final move against the British, with thanks to help from the Scottish and others, of course. But she led them into battle, and once the siege of Orléans was lifted, it really turned the tides and led to the eventual crowning a few months later of Charles VII, the Dauphin that she was called to fight for from her voices, according to her. That's what God told her to do, and she did it and accomplished all that within a couple of years. So we walk because there's a golden statue of her that was given to us by France in the 50s. It wasn't always in the French Quarter. It was moved to the French Quarter in 1999. We think it's a good place for her there, and it certainly allows us to celebrate French heritage in the French Quarter and celebrate her statue and the fact that we have this great French lineage. People will just assume that she's the patron saint of New Orleans, even though she isn't officially. We just call her the unofficial patron saint. So I think she's also a symbol of so many things that New Orleanians feel we represent, which is this tenacity and loyalty to a place and a strong feeling of purpose.
So now where does the new and expanded route take revelers?
So we start at Toulouse and Decatur. We're going to cross the street and go to about two blocks up to Conti and make that right onto Conti, which brings us back to our original route, We always go up Conti and take that right on charters. And a new element as of last year, this is only the second year we're going to be doing this magnificent toast, very formal and well done, as it would be by the Historic New Orleans Collection. They're going to toast the crew and the royalty right there at that corner at 400 Charters at the Williams Research Center. So it's kind of our first stop and a good place for people to also gather there on the other side of the courthouse and that 400 block of Charters. Then we go towards Jackson Square for our second stop, which has become a really important part of our parade. It's kind of the central moment of our parade is when Joan, our student Joan, maid of honor, has the sword blessed by the current very Reverend Philip Landry at the cathedral. We'll stop there right in front of the cathedral for that blessing. We do give out some candles there. After the blessing of the sword, we continue down Charters, and this time we take it a few blocks further than St. Philip Street to turn at Ursuline. We get to walk alongside the convent. You can see a little bit of the French Market before we turn back onto Decatur. And then there's this nice stretch again of the French Quarter that we haven't gone through where we're approaching behind Joan's statue. We walk right past Joan. Joan will be on our left. We stay with traffic on Decatur. And we go all the way down to Jackson Square, so about another four blocks, and then we're going to have our king cake ceremony and fire dancer and a few other celebratory elements at Washington Artillery Park, which is right across from Jackson Square where that amphitheater is. We still have a tree up there with the fleur-de-lis at the top, so it'll be a nice setting. And that's where we'll have the king give Joan her birthday cake. Joan crowns her king, and we'll have some music and sharing of king cake.
Now, are there floats in this parade?
We don't have floats. No, we're really still a walking procession. What we do have are some large-scale puppets. We have three large-scale puppets representing Joan's voices, St. Margaret, St. Catherine, and St. Michael. This year, we have a new large-scale puppet created by local artist Jacob Martin. That's a huge bishop head representing her trial, and it should be really large and ominous, representing the 92 judges that Joan had at her trial. And we have these large processional banners. We have four horses, and we have these interesting groups of dance troops from the city.
Now, who's in the court this year?
So our king is Jacques Soulas, who happens to be a Frenchman. We always try to choose a real Frenchman for our king, Charles VII. Jacques is the co-owner of Café Degas, and he is also an artist, which is fantastic. He is a visual artist and painter. So we have this new painting completed in November 2013, and it's a painting of the Joan of Arc statue, of course, the golden statue at New Place de France. And he's generously donated his time and talent in the painting. We had it framed, and we're going to be auctioning it off first on eBay, and then we'll close the auction January 2nd. The queen this year is Mary Beth Romig, who is a native New Orleanian. We all know her from her days at the Convention and Visitors Bureau and also with Mitch Landry's team. When he was just coming into office, she was his communications director.
The Joan of Arc Parade is also known for its unique throws. What can we look forward to this year?
We've got everything from these handmade Joan of Arc dolls. This one happens to have a little lamb with her and her in her peasant outfit. These are all stamped and dated. We have these Joan of Arc Saint medallions that, again, were hand-compiled by the crew, the front and back, with information about Joan and these beautiful images of Joan. Those are put in a nice little package with a prayer card. Every year we give out prayer cards and matches, and this year LED candles. We also have wooden doubloons, some butterfly garden seed packets, these really beautiful printed packets that have seeds for flowers that attract butterflies because Joan's banner was apparently followed by butterflies. That's one of the beautiful legends of her story. We have different types of jewelry, some really detailed handiwork on jewelry items. We do throw candy since it's family friendly. We always throw atomic fireballs because, again, we're always a little bit tongue in cheek. Our king is also going to be handing out the prints of this beautiful painting of the Joan of Arc statues. And we're also giving out these new playing cards that are going to become part of the parade every year. We'll add to it so that people can collect what will essentially and eventually become a deck of cards for the Joan of Arc parade. But this year we're starting with a king, queen, and bastard of Orléans playing card. And these are these very detailed 4x6-inch playing cards that have the history of these characters on the back. Because, again, we do want to remind people that most of the elements in the parade have some meaning and are tied into Joan's story and it based on histories. And Joan herself, our maid of honor, Joan, will be handing out 16 hand-decorated and locally carved wooden swords to represent the year that she left home to get her sword and go into battle.
And you wind down with a birthday cake.
This year it'll be at Washington Artillery Park, right across from Jackson Square. At the end of the parade, it's just a nice party gathering. We sing happy birthday to Joan. And our court gives brief speeches about Joan and honoring her. So the king, the queen, and Joan herself talk at the end.
Amy Kirk, founder of the crew of Joan of Arc. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, and happy 12th night.
The 6th annual Joan of Arc Parade walks on 12th night, January 6th, at 6 p.m. in the French Quarter, beginning at Toulouse and Decatur Streets. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?